All right, folks, in this time of trouble and turmoil where the news has got you down and there are important topics to dive into and discuss, we're going to review commercials for movies because that is what we do apparently on this network now. God, I'm sick of this show already. It's another trailer dump. It's Frank and Pete and Alan Pope, and we've got a bunch of trailers to review.
A lot of trailers. Wow.
Let's start off with the first thing because that's usually how it works. Bohemian Rhapsody. It's been out for a little while now. Bohemian Rhapsody trailer. What did you guys think? This is the Freddie Mercury Queen biopic.
Oh, I thought it was just a trailer for a mixtape.
No.
A remix of all of Queen's greatest hits.
I actually really enjoy how they use the music in that way. I liked how they hit all the melody of mixing it all together. I think they did a good job.
I agree. I'm a little sad it looks as good as it does.
Why is that?
Well, because from what I've heard about the movie, they're going to be cutting out all references to his homosexuality and the AIDS crisis and everything like that. So it's a very neutered version of, well, like of that person, you know?
Yeah. I've heard that as well. I mean, we haven't seen the movie yet, so maybe not. The trailer, I could have sworn it was him giving like romantic eyes to a man in there as well, but maybe not. For what it is, I think Rami Malek is a gift to humanity.
Oh, absolutely.
He looks amazing as Freddy.
Again, I have to say, like, it does make me sad because it does look so good and he looks amazing in that role.
Yeah, he has superb comedic timing in that trailer.
Yeah. There's some good gags in there as well. I don't think anyone's doing the singing in this other than Freddie Mercury, right? That's pretty clear.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be an interesting film. I'm going to give it a shot. I would also be curious to see if they delve into some of what the man went through, and I think it's important.
Yeah, I think it's probably a movie to see and hate afterwards if you don't like the way they treated the character.
Right. So speaking of hating afterwards, Mission Impossible Fallout. Mission Impossible and Fast and the Furious are two franchises. They get well reviewed for the most part. The fans like them a lot, especially Fast and the Furious. But Mission Impossible, I have never actually delved in too much. I think I've seen one or so of each of them. This one was another Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah, it's funny you compare those two because they are very similar in more than just being genre films that are franchised like that. They're also films that start out in completely different places than where they are now. The original film is, you know, it's not an action movie. It's as kind of hard to break into as a spy thriller can get. It's very twisty. And the other ones, from that point forward, are very straightforward and very just action schlock. And, you know, Fast and the Furious, this, like, started out as, like, a gang movie. And, like, you know, like, oh,
it became, like, this emotional roller coaster of true love and friendship.
There you go.
Yes. There's nothing about this trailer that really sings to me. I don't know. I feel like these are kind of trope by now. They're kind of done.
I really like the trailer. It definitely doesn't make me want to watch the movie, but it's a trailer I would watch again and again because I feel like
wow,
all those scenes are done so well to that music, and I like all the one-liners.
I like the way it's cut. I like it's shiny and flashy.
I like the idea of Top Gun being chased by Mr. Mustache Man.
Yeah, Mr. Mustache Man, otherwise known as Superman. And the reason why we have a weird looking Superman from Justice League.
Yeah.
I mean, something wrong with this.
They really made the wrong choice on that one. They should have shaved his mustache for Superman and digitally added it in Mission Impossible because it doesn't look realistic.
And it could become his superpower in Mission Impossible. He could use his mustache to ensnare foes or whatever. I don't know.
Capture international criminals.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. All right, here's one I want to delve into pretty deeply with you. The Best Friends trailer, or Best Fiends, the way it's stylized.
Yeah.
This has Tommy Wiseau, Greg Sestero, hot off of Disaster Artist, The Room
biopic.
Yeah, effectively. This is a very odd trailer for a very odd filmmaking duo.
Before we get into this, I just want to say, as someone who has not seen The Room or The Disaster Artist,
I can't believe you got this far into Non-Pro and haven't seen either of those.
Well, yeah, but given that I haven't, I actually have no opinion on this trailer whatsoever.
It was just neutral to you?
This was just a bunch of, like, colors and noises.
How about you too?
Flashing across the screen.
I would like to add that, like, something that makes me want to watch a movie, which is definitely here, is that I have no idea what's going on in the movie, but it does kind of entice you to see the movie either way. Like, there's certain elements that make me interested to want to see the movie, and I'm happy I know nothing about it.
Yeah, sometimes a mystery is what sells a trailer more than actually just having everything spelled out to you.
I'd actually like a little bit more, but I kind of got what the film was supposed to be about or what it might be about. Like, it... From what I understand, and somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, this film was kind of made in response to The Disaster Artist?
Not exactly. I think the two of them got back into making films because of The Disaster Artist. I think that helped patch up a lot of the problems in their relationship. I don't want to go into editorializing whatever the hell they went through, but I think that's what inspired this. It's a two-volume movie, which is weird in itself. Here's the thing. With The Room, for people who don't know, like Pete... it's a very awkward film, filmed like quasi-professionally in terms of budget, but poorly in terms of everything else. All the wrong choices are made in this movie. Odd actor, acting, odd casting, odd writing, everything. This has the two major people involved in that, Greg Sestero and Tommy Wiseau, who is notoriously weird and oddball, coming together to make another production. What I like about this is Tommy Wiseau is playing an oddball character in this movie. He is some sort of mortician. He has this awkward friendship with Greg Sestero's Drifter character, which reflects their real-life relationship with one another. And we're in The Room, they're kind of best friends, and Tommy's sort of the lead as Johnny, and he's, like, beloved by everyone, but you don't buy it at all. In this film, they are cast to type much better. Like, Tommy's a weirdo, and he's playing a weirdo. I think he may do a great job in this film. It looks really interesting. And it's about their relationship and their friendship and how it collapses involving money and women and a bunch of others, or a woman. I don't really know all the details on it, but from what I could tell, it's actually compelling, and that's shocking to me.
Putting together a movie, it looks actually well done. It looks like there's some kind of production design. It sounds good. There's just, coming from the professional end, it feels a lot more
well
properly done, yes.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This does not look like a weirdo film someone just started doing on a camcorder or what have you.
So right now we can basically say that the trailer producers are very good.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd have to be great to be able to only shoot amazing films for the five clips you need for the trailer. I do think that this thing is going to be well produced. And I do, like, again, a lot of the acting problems I think they may have resolved. If the story is good and not heavy-handed or self-involved, which is the risk, I think this actually might be the best movie we've talked about so far.
Or it's at least aware of both those things that you're talking about.
Oh.
Like, if it does that and it's very much aware of its self-indulgence and everything else, then I think it would work.
Well, are you saying, like, if at some point Tommy walks into the room and says, oh, hi, everyone.
Theoretically, yes. I think it would still work.
I don't know. I think I think you get to parody at that point. I don't know if you could quite pull that off. Whatever. Another one that's going to be of big interest to the people in this room. This is a podcast coming out of New Jersey, and there's a film called Action Point from the people that brought you Jackass, I would assume. At least some of the people who brought you Jackass.
Did you say Action Park?
No, Action Point. So, okay, for those of you listening outside of New Jersey, this movie is about a theme park. Not really a theme park, but like an
amusement park.
Amusement park, that's a better term. An amusement park. That is notoriously, safety is not an issue at this park that we are being told about in this movie. And it mirrors perfectly a actual amusement park from New Jersey's not-so-distant past called Action Park.
Action Park was a popular death trap in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, often referred to as Traction Park because of the number of accidents that came out of it. It's a classic summer movie where there's a, you know, like a camp or what have you that has a rival, bigger, well-financed camp that's out there trying to take over. In this case, it's Action Point up against their rival. What was their?
Like Seven Park.
Seven Park, which is their Six Flags.
Yeah.
It was Seven Flags. It was Seven Flags.
No, Seven Parks.
It was the Seven Parks?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they can't use the flags.
Yeah. It's
too close.
I think it's pretty indicative of what they're... That to me is a deep cut. I'm surprised that they decided to reference Action Park and its rivalry with Great Adventure Six Flags.
Is Johnny Knoxville from Jersey? I didn't think he was.
No, I don't think so, but I definitely, A, see him as someone who would become aware of the mythology surrounding Action Park. And I also see him and the Jackass crew as the perfect people to make a movie about Action Park.
All right, next on our list is Robin Hood, another Robin Hood movie. What are the name of this one?
This one, all right, they tried as hard as humanly possible to make a bow and arrow look like a gun. Like, that's the best thing I can say about this movie is, like...
I think that was a crossbow, dude.
No. I mean the bow and arrow as well. That crossbow was also really weird, and it looked like a gun.
This is the one that has Taron Egerton from Kingsman in it. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense. You want to capitalize on that. The success of the Kingsman franchise, I guess.
I feel like they're trying to frame him as this action hero, and he's almost comically this small guy that I don't really... Like, I only accept because it's Kingsman, and I have a hard time framing him in that movie in my head.
I'm okay with this one. It seems like an action-y kind of Robin Hood story, and it's been a while since I've seen a Robin Hood movie. I know, like, Robin Hood is the character that they keep trying to reinvent, but as long as there aren't, like, two or three in a year, and they usually are.
It comes in waves.
Yeah.
This, like King Arthur movies.
Yeah, exactly. And this seems to be standing alone. I'm okay with watching a high-octane Robin Hood in some ridiculous time and setting that it's hard to figure out.
Jamie Foxx looks pretty entertaining.
The only thing I will give this Robin Hood in its favor is that it doesn't seem to be making any attempt to try and declare itself to be the real story of Robin Hood. Like so many have in the past, then just being completely insane.
That is a great point. A lot of these crappy Robin Hood movies are like, the pretense is, this is the true story, or the story that the fairy tale didn't tell you. And it's like, no, none of this is...
Yeah. No, this is just a crazy action movie.
Yeah. Speaking of crazy action movies, not at all. Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald. That's been out for a while.
Grindelwald.
Oh, thank you for correcting me on the name of this.
Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald.
What did I say?
I think you said Fantastic Beasts.
I may have said Harry Potter.
Yeah, you probably did that, too.
It's half a dozen, one or the other.
It's The Wizarding World.
The Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald?
Grindelwald.
Wald?
Wald.
What a goofy name.
Just call him Magic Hitler.
Magic Hitler. This trailer's been out for a while. I don't know if there's anything else we want to add to it.
I will say this. The thing I was most concerned about, I am not anymore. I am buying Jude Law as a young Dumbledore.
Oh, why?
Because the mannerisms that he's got, I am believing. I hear Dumbledore in his voice.
That's cool.
It's definitely not the same. He's not trying to do an impression of Michael Gambon or the other one.
Richard Harris.
Sure. Oh my God, Richard Harris is the one I forgot?
Yeah.
Okay, I should just shut up.
Yeah, you gotta walk yourself off the podcast.
No, he's not doing an impression of either of them. But he's still embodying the essence of the character.
I feel like anytime there's a revisiting to the wizard world, I will gladly throw my money at J.K. Rowling, just because I'm one of those people who can very easily just jump back into it and enjoy my childhood again.
Real quick, while we're on the fantasy kick, I Kill Giants.
Yes,
this
you
is
do.
A Zoe Saldana film. I was intrigued when I heard about it coming out.
Yeah.
Saw the trailer, and no thank you. I want to be very specific about why, no thank you. Do you recall a film, and I never read the book as a kid, or I don't even know if it came out as a kid. I don't remember what year it came out. The Bridge to Terabithia.
Oh.
That's what I think we just saw. I think we just saw a trailer that is for another Bridge for Terabithia, another film that is framed as if it's a Harry Potter fantasy whatever, but is in reality mostly in the imagination of a small child. And involves dealing with tragedy and loss. And I don't think that story is untellable or not worth telling. I just don't like the bait and switch. And I feel like this might be one. It was with Bridge and Terabithia. I brought my nieces to see it when they were little. And they left crying, going, why is this thing? It just was not what we thought it would be.
I will say, before I saw the trailer, I was given a synopsis of the film where it was told that it's a story about a young girl who uses a Dungeons and Dragons-like role-playing game to escape from the problems in her real life.
Which sounds so cool.
Yeah. And I think I can see that, knowing that, watching this trailer, I think I liked the trailer a lot more.
That's fair. And to be honest,
but I totally agree with you on general populace going to this with nothing else. This could easily be seen as a bait and switch like Terabithia.
And I think, like, this as a trailer dump or as reviewing trailers, I don't know what to say about this. Because as a trailer on its own, I didn't like it. I was very upset.
Yeah.
But the concept sounds good. It's based on a comic that's supposed to be really well received. I would be excited to see it, but for the fear of a bait and switch.
Yeah, I know I said before that, like, not knowing how the movie's going to play out makes me want to watch it more, but the fact that that key element is not known, I mean, it becomes so in reading the synopsis, but not knowing that key element in the trailer just will destroy me in trying to watch the movie. It'll hurt me. It'll make me cry. I don't know.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't know exactly in what sense she escapes into this realm.
Right, right.
I don't know if this is she escapes into Jumanji. You know, but knowing that the possibility is there for it to go either way is interesting. I get, Frank, remember on Near Mint, Joe the Barbarian?
Yes.
I'm getting a very similar vibe from this.
I just feel like the trailer should commit one way or the other, and I agree with you on this, because I want to go into the movie and not, because when you go into that film and you're debating with yourself over and over again about which way it's going to go, that's the movie to you at that point. You're missing the point. You're missing all the things that it's supposed to be about because you're waiting for the shoe to drop, as opposed to just, you know, waiting for the story to go on itself.
Oh, Al, you're the worst. You're the kind of guy that wants the Jaws trailer to tell you whether or not the shark is real.
Wait a minute. Speaking of trailers and backstories, Black Klansman, a Spike Lee joint from producer Jordan Peele. This is the story of a black cop who presents himself as a white man who wants to join the KKK under David Duke. What did you folks think of this trailer?
I think it looked awesome. I like that Adam Driver's in this movie because I like him, seeing him do more than just, you know, the Star Wars shtick.
Right.
And like he's not a bad actor.
No, not at all. I think he's actually done quite a bit of stuff, but a little bit more indie things. Nice to see him something in high profile.
Yeah, I appreciate that he's kind of getting back to his comedic roots. A la Girls, which was one of his big breakout roles. And really, like, I'm just excited to see the dynamic of, you know, the two sides of the same coin where both guys are playing the same guy within the movie. And I'm happy to see that play out.
Watch the trailer, by the way, because the way we've described it here is completely misleading. But it's accurate if you watch the trailer and understand.
I also like the guy from That 70s Show was playing David Duke, I think.
Topher Grace?
Yeah, yes. Topher Grace. Yeah.
He finally found the villain role that fits him.
You mean Venom?
Yeah. Yes.
What?
Never forget.
Yeah. John David Washington in there as Ron Stallworth. You know what? Here's the thing that I like about this movie more than anything else. The quasi-blaxploitation feel, the graphics, the way the music ties in this trailer. It's like a nice, tight story that they want to tell. It's all beautiful. It's all good. I enjoyed it. It's very funny. It's very topical, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that this is set in the 70s. And also this, it's based on a true story. It is 100% a true story.
Oh, I can imagine.
I was wondering as soon as they named David Duke.
Yeah. So there really was a black police officer who, over the phone, called a bunch of KKK people and unraveled this big nest of white supremacy, masquerading as a white person with the help of another cop who occasionally played him when he had to make face-to-face meetings with someone. I love this. I've actually heard interviews with the officer. I think it is Ron Stallworth is his actual name. It's amazing and comes at a really, really apropos time in America, I think.
Oh, yeah, when they're all screaming America first in the...
it was like two on the nose at that point, but I liked it. I liked it. So let's go a little lighter right now. Let's bring up something that's a little bit more fun and freewheeling. It's been a long time coming. Incredibles 2, a sequel to the infamous, wonderful Incredibles movie.
I like that instantly you got that like 50s, 60s-esque feel like you got from the original movie. I always like enjoyed that period-esque piece from the original Incredibles, and I'm happy that, you know, they're continuing it, not like progressing to the 70s or something like that with it.
Yeah, I definitely like the set design, the style of the period. It's an interesting choice to have it set immediately after the original film. They could have done a 10 years later if they wanted, but they didn't. I think I'm in favor of that.
No, I'm definitely in favor with you, Frank. I would prefer they did it this way as opposed to trying to advance the characters a number of years so they're not the characters we wanted to see anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we wanted a sequel to that movie. We didn't want to get, like, all grown up, you know, or all getting older.
That's an opportunity that you have with animated movies that you don't have with live action films.
Yeah,
you can come back and pick up where you left off.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have the option, take advantage of it. I don't know about the story. I mean, it's okay. It's back to the whole superhero registration and reversing it. I'm not really thrilled one way or the other about it. I don't really care. It was mostly about a family movie. I like to see, you know, Mr. Incredible with his child trying to figure out Jack-Jack. The only thing that really sings to me about the plot that we get to see is we get to see Violet with her what did he call it, adolescence.
Is she having an adolescence?
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of amusing. I think that's a nice, again, the power of that film for me is not only was it a good superhero film, but it was a cool family film. I like the way they did that.
Speaking of good family films.
Okay, so the one we're going to leave to the end. Happy Time Murders. Happy Time Murders is a filthy comedy set in the seedy underbelly of Los Angeles where puppets and humans coexist. That's from the trailer itself or from the description.
I like No Sesame, All Street.
Yeah, that's the tag. I don't know about this one. So this is a Jim Henson Company production. It's under its Henson Alternative banner.
Okay.
Which has been doing kind of adult material or adult-ish material for a while now, since at least I think 2006, including a series almost said Neil deGrasse Tyson, but no, I meant Neil Patrick Harris, called Neil's Puppet Dreams, which I think was on, which is like, it was not Cracked, it was on, I think, Nerdist or something like that. And I don't know about this. It's definitely meant to be more edgy and more adult themed.
I should say so.
What did you folks think?
I just really appreciated the use of silly string in the trailer.
Yeah, that going right to the money shot on that one. Yeah,
that was what I least appreciated, I think.
I think that's where it may have jumped the line. No, even a little earlier, in fact. It just the first thing a puppet says to say, hey, this isn't your kid's puppet show, is propositioning someone. There are like many drug addict and prostituting puppets in this.
Yeah. There's like, I actually didn't mind the two prostitutes on like the balcony, which that line was funny.
It was somewhat amusing. It was that, like, hey, we'll give you a good time. I'm a lady. They hesitate, and then they say, "Well, yeah, all right,
that's
sure.
fine. We're still like it played all right."
There was some room for like imagination. It wasn't super blue. The silly string scene at the end,
super blue.
A little bit amusing to me, just because of I can't believe they're doing this. But there's only so much that carries me. I get shock laugh, and I'll be like, but like afterwards, am I amused by it, or am I just like, eh? This is what college kids would do if they had puppets.
Yeah.
I think this went too far for me, and I'm not sure if I'm digging it.
I definitely feel like that college kid too far humor is definitely in there, which I feel like is very indicative often of Melissa McCarthy movies, which, honestly, her in this role, I feel like actually turns me off a little bit from the movie. I'm definitely giving them my money, but Melissa McCarthy being in this movie kind of makes me take a step back and go, am I going to really enjoy it that much?
First off, coming from a college that had a surprisingly active puppet community.
Uh-huh. Go on. You've had us captivated now.
No, I just want to say you should have a little bit more faith in the puppetry that college students can produce. But that being said, I want to believe that this trailer is playing the gross out sex aspects,
the most salacious things.
Yeah, they're trying to hook you in with the most outrageous stuff. I think that the story in this looks interesting.
Yeah, sure.
It's definitely not just a throwaway to hang gross out humor on.
Hopefully.
It has the potential not to be.
Yeah, there's a Who Framed Roger Rabbit-esque thing there that might be interesting.
And I like that it at least went away so it wasn't just, oh, hey, I wish we had done Avenue Q. And,
oh, yeah.
Like, it's not that. And I gotta at least say, all right, well, props for taking it a direction. Do I wish you had taken it this far in that direction? Probably not. But I'm at least glad you didn't, like, oh man, why didn't we think of this? And then try and do it like you had. I can give them credit where credit is due on that.
I do appreciate the pulpy element, though, of the trailer, because you literally get a couple of puppets wasted in the trailer. Which, you know, if you saw a person getting blown apart like that, you would think it too excessive, like a Tarantino movie. But these are, you know, stuffed creatures.
Yeah, like a true American, I'm okay with violence. I'm just a little hesitant about sex.
What I'll say for them is, at least so far as we've seen in the trailer, and I believe this is the case throughout the movie, they're at least respecting the Muppets that America has come to know and love and have taken our kids to see see the movie.
Wise choice.
You know, we don't have Kermit the Frog in this.
Right.
Involved in any of it, even if he wasn't to be participating.
Here's my addendum to that, though. While true, we don't actually see characters we recognize. I heard voices I recognize from classic Muppet performers, and I mean, there's only so much range you have for any performer, any character. Eventually, some of these characters do sound the same, and I recognize some voices. So it felt a little. I don't know. I'm not worried about being offended. I don't want to give people the wrong impression. I don't care about the gross out. I just think that those can be very lazy jokes. If all there is like, oh, my God, but puppets aren't supposed to have sex. If that's literally all it is for 2 hours, I'm good. I watched the trailer and that's enough for me. And that could be the tagline of this show. I watched the trailer and it's good enough for me. If you enjoyed this, what's wrong with you? Whatever. Like and follow and subscribe to the show. Give us a 5-star rating because we desperately need it. We don't produce trailers for this show. And basically, I think of all the movies on this list that you should go see, I would 100% say Best Fiends. No, I can't. I think Black Klansman is my favorite. How about you?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't even remember.
I would say Incredibles 2. I've been waiting on that film for a while, so.
Yeah, ditto on Incredibles 2. I'm going to be waiting out for that to buy the ticket once I can.
Wait, I'm going to change mine. Action Point. There I forgot about it. That's the one I was trying to remember.
There you go.
It's like, it didn't make enough of an impression on me to remember it for the 15 minutes. But no, it looks good. Watch that.
We're out of words.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.